Hey there, I'm Joe Hilliard.
And I'm Aislinn Campbell. Welcome to our weekly podcast, Dinner Table Talks.
Well, it's crawfish season, and that can only mean one thing. Aislinn's eating crawfish. We had a big crawfish boil, and then I took those leftovers home and did something special with them.
And it's our very first Table Topics giveaway.
Now, if you'd like to learn more about this podcast, we always suggest people go back to episode one.
And you can go to dinnertabletalks.com to find out more information about us, listen to all the episodes of the podcast, and record a voicemail and leave it for us.
Now pull up a chair.
Dinner is served. Hello and welcome to your weekly podcast, Dinner Table Talks. I'm your co-host, Aislinn Campbell, and with me as always...
Joe Hilliard. I anticipated that is...
Very Joe Hilliard.
I am here. How was your week, darling?
It was a very good week. I have a lot of good going on in my life these days, so... And we've started on this little adventure on Sunday mornings, where we do live from the backyard garden.
Yeah, people can go to your Facebook page...
Aislinn Campbell, public speaker.
I'll post that on Facebook.
Yeah.
And see you in the garden every week.
Maybe we'll keep me talking about gardening about one less minute per episode.
Oh, I see. So so this new thing that you're doing on your Facebook page is going to reduce the gardening talk here on the show?
Yes.
I guess I'll believe it when I see it.
By 1 minute an episode. And Joe will tell you about his chickens and what he likes to do with the food that I cook in the garden.
That's a fun thing you're doing.
Yes, it is fun. I'm enjoying it. So that was a good addition to my life.
I'm glad to be involved.
Thank you.
It is time.
Unanswered questions.
So after we muddled around the curry talk last week.
You failed totally.
No, I didn't fail.
I reached out to Darlene Schmidt.
You did?
Yeah, I talked to her today.
She said she failed?
No. she... Actually, it's an interesting story.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it.
Why don't we get into the unanswered question, and I'll talk to you about it when it's appropriate.
Oh, nice.
I'm the PR guy. I said, if you listen to last episode...
You're the PR guy?
Yeah. Believe it or not, you read an article from Darlene Schmidt about curry.
Uh-huh.
And you said, an unanswered question should be, who is Darlene Schmidt?
Yes.
And I said, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, I looked into who Darlene Schmidt was.
I was wondering if you did.
I found out.
Oh my God, this is great. So anyways, my filler word is.
Yeah, so.
We looked up filler words too. So he's been researching a bit.
I take this podcast seriously.
Last week, curry conversation got us nowhere. We learned that there are different types of the word curry, and we learned that the way people make the dish curry is different all over the world. But we learned nothing about what Penang curry actually is, which was the original question.
You did a horrible job.
So I hear. There are green curry, and its color comes from fresh, hot green chilies like serranos, and it tends to be the hottest of curries. Then,
now finally, you're giving me some valuable information. When I go to our favorite Thai restaurant, I will know a little bit more about why the green and the yellow, they're all different. Green is hot.
Green is hot.
Okay.
That's right. Now, red curry, which is the most similar to Penang curry, we did learn that last week. Those are made with red chilies, so dried red chilies, and they're a little bit hot as well. So red curry, a little bit hot as well, but not as hot as the green paste.
I'm with you.
Okay. Now let's get into the yellow curry, which you said last week is our favorite curry.
I can tell you what I believe the flavor profile is based upon how much we like a yellow curry.
What do you think?
It's going to be a coconut or some kind of cream base. It's going to be more fragrant than it is spicy, and it is simply delicious. How did I do?
Turmeric and Indian-style curry powder, which we love, turmeric, Indian-style curry powder, is...
The principal ingredient.
Yes, that's why it's yellow. Yep. Okay, now Penang curry.
Right. Now let's get to it.
Is similar to the red, but it also has ground peanuts in it.
That's the secret Penang ingredient.
It's the peanut. Yes.
Oh, a mystery solved.
And one more that she names or this person names or whoever names is called masman. I've actually had this before. It's a Malaysian-influenced sauce and is relatively mild.
I feel like I know so much more about curry, and I'm eager to go eat some Thai food.
I love curry.
So I found that Darlene Schmidt was a curry expert in the writing world.
Oh.
So whenever we were like, who's Darlene Schmidt?
Curry.
A curry enthusiast would say, you don't know who Darlene Schmidt is?
Does that make her a courier?
So I reached out to her. I found her. She has a
literally reached out to her?
She has a Facebook page that has not been very active since about 2015. And that was alarming because that was the only like live avenue. And she messaged me back.
Oh my God. You spoke to...
I did. Well, a little bit. I said, hey, we do this silly podcast where we did some silly stuff last week. And I reached out so that you could potentially answer. And she basically said that she's no longer in the curry business because she became a vegan, which makes eating curry, I guess, difficult to do. She explained. I feel like she's turned her back on the curry world.
Oh, is this real?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Our life is an open book, and I'm going to be nothing but honest on this podcast.
God, that's
hilarious. And if I elect not to answer a question, it's because I don't want to be honest about it.
Very good.
Yeah, Darlene Schmidt. So I'm going to post some of her old work on our Facebook page this week.
About curry work.
She has become a character in our show.
Oh my God, Darlene Schmidt.
Because I invited her to leave a voicemail. Hi, it's me, Darlene Schmidt. How dare you? You know, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And she just would not bite.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
But it's because she's turned her back on the curry world. Like, I can no longer be a representative for curry.
Oh my God.
I have renounced curry in all of its colors. And
I am no longer a courier.
And then she tore the courier badge off the side of her shirt and threw it on the ground. Something like that happened.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Well, last week we also asked the question, what is roti? Roti, but roti, R-O-T-I. Aislinn, the reason why I love these questions and the ability to answer them is because if you go back to episode 7, we talk about the first time I ate Ethiopian food.
Uh-huh.
And you open up that menu, and it's words you've never seen.
Habesha.
And it's
Habesha.
And that's the utility bread that they use.
No, that was...
One of the dishes. Even now, injera. Even now, when I go back for my second Ethiopian restaurant experience, and I open up that big menu... I'll feel a little bit more comfortable because I've been there one time.
Yeah.
I want to go back again and again and again. And when I go, I want to learn these terms. And I want to understand so that when I hear roti.
Roti.
I know the answer to the question because I love Indian food and I should know the nuances between all of their different utility breads.
So compared to injera, what is roti?
You've heard of naan.
I know naan.
Naan. Naan is a flatbread that is made of enriched flour typically and it's leavened.
It's got a little lift to it. It's got a little rise to it.
Exactly. Something's been added to the bread to make it rise.
Got it.
Be it yeast, be it some other leavening agent.
Leavening.
Baking soda, baking powder. They're all leaveners.
The most I've heard about the leavened and unleavened bread was in the Bible.
That's right. In fact, if you read an article about leavened bread, what is leavening? What's the difference? You may see biblical elements to it because you're right. That's the number one thing. It became a condition of, anyway.
What was it a condition of?
Of being part of the blessed people. Being, you must eat kosher food.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You must, on certain situations, not eat leavened bread.
Got it.
These are the rules that are written.
And so it is.
So what do you imagine is the number one difference between roti and naan?
Roti is unleavened.
It is. It's probably the most popular type of Indian bread that is eaten in India. Somehow naan came through as...
Is that crunchy chip thing we eat?
No, it is a bread. I know what you're thinking of.
Okay.
A flat wafer that is crispy.
Yeah.
No, generally speaking, roti is an unleavened bread made from wheat flour, not enriched flour. It's rolled out very thin and usually cooked on a griddle.
Okay, I'm going to eat some more of that.
But imagine the idea that when you go into the Indian food restaurant, you are knowledgeable enough to ask for different type of breads to eat with different dishes. You follow me?
Yes.
Some dish is going to be completely, perfectly accompanied by the naan. And this one over here is going to be, that's getting to a different level. It's getting to a next level that if you listen to Dinner Table Talks for the next 200 episodes, we'll eventually get there.
Well, I have eaten, and I can't recall what it's called right now because it's been a long time since I've run into it, but there used to be this vegetarian Indian food restaurant in Austin that served a bread that was made out of lentils, and it was like a white little biscuit made out of lentils, and it was so good dipped in their like tomato coconut soup that they make. Anyway, I love Indian food. It's my favorite.
I'm going to grab you by the waist and pull you back off of memory lane back into real life now. Do you mind?
Yeah.
Last week, you requested this one.
I
do
did.
An unanswered question about paneer cheese.
What is paneer? Tell us all about it.
I just use the idea that you can scratch the surface of particular culinary worlds.
Oh,
then,
yes.
And then you can go real deep.
Uh-huh.
You're trying to get into the world of cheese. And that, if you walk into the right store at the wrong time, is a very complicated idea.
It's a very long conversation.
Cheese is a whole world.
I finally listened to the Cheese Plate episode of Spilled Milk.
That's a podcast you really enjoy.
I love it. I listen, and they're funny, and they talk about food. And, I mean, what else do you think I would want to listen to? They know a lot more about cheese than we do.
It's a big, big world. Cheese.
That cheese world.
Wine, beer, I mean, bread. Those are big, big worlds. And we, as Americans, typically know
our world.
The limits of what is available in the supermarket.
We like our American bubble. It's true.
We have become accustomed to our American bubble because the powers that be that we pay to feed us have determined that these limited amount of items are the most profitable.
Mm. That makes sense.
So you got to go away from that mass supermarket and into the Asian supermarket to find mm-hmm. paneer cheese.
So what did you find about the paneer cheese?
I thought
that was
a very I want credit for the very thoughtful way that I looped us back around to where I was trying to go.
Good job. Do it now.
Everything I said was true. You've heard of Little Miss Muffet?
Yes.
What was she sitting on?
Curds. No. And whey.
That would have been a messy chair. Let's start over.
Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet.
Right, and what was she eating?
Curds and whey.
There you go. You're just beating me to the punchline. I'm just going to sit down right here. I was aiming for the tuffet. Okay. That was funny. I promise you. That's why I love you so much, is you laugh at my stupid, stupid jokes. Just 25% more than anyone really ever should. Okay.
I peed myself a little bit. I'm sorry. I'm going to get back on track now. I'm literally crying.
You're saying too much. You're saying too many good things to apologize for.
Okay. Paneer, what is it?
The main thing to know about paneer cheese is it's the first cheese that you should attempt to make in your own home if you ever flirt with the idea of making cheese.
Yes.
And that is because it is very simple to make.
Like just a farmhouse.
This is the number one cheese of India, particularly northern India. This is their cheddar cheese, the big block of Kraft cheddar cheese. Uh-huh, paneer cheese is their cheese.
Yeah, yeah.
I would imagine, without doing this level of research, that's because it is a peasant food that can be made in your own home if you've got the ability to boil milk. You take raw milk or milk. In America, it's difficult to get raw milk. That's a different topic for a different day.
Especially in Texas.
Right. But you take your milk and you boil it, slow boil, and then you add an agent like lemon juice that will separate the Miss Tuffet's favorite two things.
Curds and the whey.
Miss Muffet. I heard what I said. And when you add that acid to this boiling milk, the curd and the whey separates.
So you could make us paneer.
You run it through cheesecloth.
Uh-huh.
And then you know, to get the juice, whey away from the curd.
Yes.
Whey away.
Whey away, whey.
And after you strain those through the cheesecloth, they press them into those blocks that we buy at the grocery store.
Very nice.
It is a low fat cheese, which is why it doesn't melt whenever you fry it on a skillet to brown the edges to put into your sog paneer or other paneer dishes.
Nice.
You're welcome.
I think I kind of understood that. It's the same thing in America that they just called the farmhouse cheese.
Now, taking some aspect of that with different types of milk, goat's milk, sheep's milk, etc., the two most used milks for paneer in India, cow, water buffalo.
Really?
Take that to your next cocktail party.
Water buffalo.
If you and I saw water buffalo cheese, we'd try it in a heartbeat, wouldn't we?
Oh, surely. Of course. Don't call me Shirley.
Milk's milk.
So I got... We're going to crack each other up all night.
That's awful.
That's so awful. Now, saffron.
Yes.
And I noticed that you made a post on Facebook that talked about how I finally got my chance to tell the saffron story.
That was the worst story that I've laughed the most at in re-listening to the podcast.
I laughed so hard when I listened to this episode later on during that.
It was a very inside joke episode.
That was freaking hilarious. It was. And then as I go on to read through the unanswered questions about saffron saffron is.
This was my question. Okay, we went to go buy this thing. I go to the grocery store. I see oregano, basil, thyme. They're all there. Mm-hmm. What is it about saffron that makes it this weird thing?
Right. And it's ridiculously expensive, which is the reason why the guy was hiding it behind
the counter.
Yeah, because it's expensive.
The way you do the electronics at the drugstore.
It had a lock and key on it.
They can get toilet paper that's $18, but we can't give them access to these headphones.
Right. Well, because saffron is the most... Because saffron...
And the receipt's a mile long, am I right? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm done.
Because saffron is one of the most precious spices in the world. The thread-like red stigmas and the yellow hue they impart are quite literally the stuff of legends.
Saffron.
It comes from a flower called the Crocus sativus, commonly known as saffron crocus. It's now primarily grown in Iran, Greece, Morocco, and India. Not much in America. Very small quantities. Instantly recognizable in a dish. It colors things yellow. Rice will turn yellow.
But so will it with turmeric, and turmeric's much less expensive.
Sure, but in a different flavor profile completely. So why is it so expensive? Each flower produces only 3 threads of saffron, and it blooms for only 1 week each year. The saffron must be harvested by hand in the mid-morning when the flowers are still closed in order to protect the delicate stigmas inside. It takes about 1,000 flowers to produce just 1 ounce of saffron. That's why you pay $10 to $13 per gram for the real deal.
I'd like to repeat back to you what you just told me in a completely different way.
Okay.
As I said, at the grocery store spice aisle is basil, oregano, paprika. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And there is saffron.
Yeah.
In that little glass bottle is a black, opaque, plastic wrapper that you have to cut open to find
the saffron.
20 little red threads inside of it. Yeah. And that cost me $20.
Yep.
The reason why, if I understand what you're saying, is that it is so delicate and so...
inefficient to harvest.
Thank you. Those are the words I was looking for. It requires so much manpower to create this delicate.
It's hard
edible.
To grow it where you grow it. It's hard to grow it.
You just described a farmer's market.
Why things are more expensive?
Why things are more expensive. They are hand tended.
Yes.
In short quantity.
Yes.
Because of the ability to use this much labor to get it.
Yeah, good luck finding some of the heirloom tomatoes that I'm harvesting from my backyard at your local grocery store.
Well, I was just talking economics. You're just bragging.
Oh, well, that's something that's going to be bragged and bragged and bragged upon.
As is the custom in our lives, we've eaten some amazing food.
Yes.
Since the last time we spoke.
And favorites, even.
Okay, I love conversations about favorite foods.
Uh-huh.
Like my... homemade steak fingers are one of my own favorite foods.
Yep.
Are we talking about one of your favorite foods?
Yes. Crawfish. Boiled crawfish.
I would never want to get between you and the first crawfish boil of the season and try to keep you away from it. I would get hurt.
Well, remember one year I was sick and you brought them home to me?
Yes.
Everybody else got to go and I was sick, I had a cold.
Okay, well, we got to back up because we're talking now every single week. It gets a larger and larger and more countries and more states and more cities within those states.
Uh-huh.
There are folks that do not know what you're talking about right now.
Boiled crawfish. We eat boiled crawfish January through... I usually eat it January through April. I've heard people say December through May or June even. What we're talking about is a giant boil, like boiled shrimp, but crawfish. And spicy with a Louisiana boil, a Louisiana spice.
And because there is a season, because there is a time of scarcity.
Yes.
Because you cannot get it.
Right.
When crawfish season starts,
yeah,
you're running to the crawfish place.
Yep. I'm going to eat crawfish at the beginning of the season, knowing I'm going to get the littlest, smallest ones.
And as often as you can.
I'm going to eat it as often as I can after that, as many times as I can during the season.
One of our local breweries is doing a crawfish boil in a couple of weeks, and we intend on being there.
And I'm serious about it.
What do you mean?
I sit down to the table. I come dressed for the occasion. We're usually outside. Okay, so we ate crawfish this last weekend with my parents. And this is how it went down. Now, my dad boils crawfish a lot, but I've learned that the first go is a pickup. Usually you'll have a seafood place or even...
We like one of those local like seafood wholesalers.
Yeah. Or even in, if you're in Louisiana, you might actually go to one of the farms where they've got a stand.
Yeah.
Where they got to stand outside.
Instead
and
of a farm stand with extra corn.
Yeah.
It's come get your crawfish. We're growing them inside here.
If you live near Maine or up in the northeast on the coast, then you're running into the same type of thing for lobster, the lobster pound. Mm-hmm. So we've got a place in town that purchases and literally drives over in that day or whatever, brings it over in that day. They go by, they pick up the crawfish, they bring them home. They boil them. You've already placed your order. You go pick them up hot off the boil and eat them immediately. So I found out that was happening and I invited myself. I guess that's what I do.
We're bringing kids.
we're coming for crawfish. Order extra. So we show up and we sit down. It's usually outside and we've got paper towels and we've got bowls and we've got an ice chest full of hot, steaming, boiled, seasoned crawfish. I sit down and start eating. Like there is no, like I might have a beer or a glass of wine there with me. It doesn't matter. All that matters is eating crawfish as fast as I can. And I suck the head and I'm good at it.
Hold on. I got to gather. I really got into crawfish with you. I would go to a crawfish boil. My fraternity in college, for example, always did a crawfish boil during rushing and all that crap. So I'm no stranger to crawfish, but your love of it, I'm talking about not, hey, oh, hey, it's crawfish season. I guess we should probably try to grow. No. It's like countdown to the day when crawfish is available.
Yes.
And I know that since crawfish season is upon us, we'll be going out and dining and eating crawfish very often. I guess it's, I don't know, your contagious enthusiasm, but certainly the idea that it is just freaking delicious.
And
the custom
too.
And the ritual of
yeah.
it. But there's a theme emerging here where it's like, go to the Asian market just to try something new, just to see what's available. Cook Indian food at home even if you have never done it before, because you can expand your horizons all of the time. And in living that, I would suggest to anyone listening, find a crawfish place near you, if one exists, if you've never done this before.
No, don't just show up at a crawfish place.
Uh-oh.
Make sure you take
at least admire the spirit of what I was trying to say.
Take a professional with you.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say, take someone with you that knows what they're doing and can show you the ropes. That's good for sushi. Do that. You know what I'm saying? If you're going to try sushi for the first time, take someone with you that knows sushi really well.
Yeah, true.
Take a mentor because...
And trust them. Take them and trust them. Let them show you how to do it. The world of cuisine is broad
and rich and wide, and we're just getting started.
Do you want me to tell you how I do it?
Please.
Let's see if I can describe it. I take one hand, my left hand has the head, and my right hand has the tail, but it's pinching the top two...
Pinching. Okay.
The top two brackets when it pulls. So I pull the head out. Now, while I have both in hand, I take my pinky finger.
Yes, you do.
And I swipe the inside of the head and suck up all the yellow fat and all the seasoning out of the head. And then I throw the head
into the empty bowl.
Now, every once in a while, you might come across one that has a giant pincher on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Go ahead and eat that guy.
Like a lobster claw.
But it's got to be worth it because you don't have time to waste on that little piece of meat.
That is true. Especially at your parents' place with your brother and the whole family there it is an elbow-to-elbow competition.
Yeah, no doubt.
If you take a break, it will all get eaten from underneath you.
Keep going.
Don't stop.
What I've got left in my hand is the tail. So I take with my two thumbs and crack the top two layers and pull off even more of the shell, right? Now I've got the whole tail that I can just pull right out.
The meat.
Now, if you care about it, and if you didn't get a really, really good chef who made sure to get them to purge, so you make the crawfish purge the mud, because crawfish are bottom suckers. So a good cook will pour salt on the water and then that makes them like get rid of the mud inside them, basically.
Right.
But if you didn't get that, then you've got literally a vein on the back that you can pull off, a little artery.
Much like a shrimp, deveining a shrimp.
Pull it off. It's easier to pull off than a shrimp, though. And you can throw that out if you care about it. And then I just eat it. But my mom usually has some kind of like mayonnaise-y, tomato-y dip type thing that she dips in there. But I just eat them. And I eat those things as fast as I can. But I do not leave out the head sucking because that's important. Like, that's an important part of it. It's better when they're like medium size. The ones we had the other day were kind of small. And if they're too big, then their shell's too hard. Their shell's real hard, although they've got a big tasty tail once you get into it. So the medium-sized ones are perfect. And they've got to have a little spice to them. And you've got to come prepared the way you're dressed. Otherwise, you're going to have red dots of boiled crawfish all over yourself by the end of the night. And you got to have rolls of paper towels so that you can like just wipe up your hands and then throw it in the empty bucket and get one slurp of your beer or your wine. And then you get back to eating again. You eat nonstop for like an hour.
And the whole time you're talking.
Yeah, just jarring.
And one of the best parts of it is your folks' house, which we've talked about on this thing many times.
And we were outside.
The location
it was cold.
Of our future wedding, right?
Yes, yes.
We're at that place, and your father has created a whole outdoor picnic area with yep. an adjacent fire pit and an adjacent little swimming pool.
Yeah.
And the fire is blazing. The night is cool.
It's cold.
It's
yeah.
clear. You can see the stars.
Oh, yeah. It was a perfect night. My dad was sharing the whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
The whiskey was warming us up.
You got to have a little nip if it's cool outside.
He had built a beautiful fire in the fire pit. So we had as soon as we got to, everybody started kind of pushing back from the table. We all took our glass of wine, filled it up, beer, whatever, when it's out by the fire pit. Everybody. This is when we could talk. Talk about everything. Talk about the wedding. Talk about the farm. I told him about the vegetables I'm growing and how the new garden that I have going out here is really big and establishing. My dad's like, I'm going to get this thing over here ready for you and we're going to plant some more stuff. And then we were talking about his grapevines and how he's planting more grapevines and talking about the blackberries. He's got more blackberries coming in. They're doing real good. So it's always nice to just be able to sit out there in the clear, cool night around the fire pit after just eating one of my favorite foods and just talk, whatever.
Outdoor space is really important.
Yeah, I couldn't live without it.
And I, you know, the last couple of weekends on those videos that you were talking about earlier, you know, we're enhancing our outdoor space with more gardens.
Yeah.
Being outdoors, especially in those little narrow weather parts of South Texas that are really pleasant to be outdoors.
We have to enjoy those.
But you have to create or find a space to do it. Well, we found that at your folks. I mean, that was just a beautiful night.
Yeah.
At the end of the night, at your folks,
yeah.
we're packing, take this food home. Take this food home.
Yeah.
This is too much for us. Take it home.
Well, and Lily wasn't with us. And Lily is a huge fan of crawfish.
She'll go elbow to elbow with you anytime.
Hunter actually will too.
Hunter will
got
put
you
them
into
away.
It. Yeah, a little bit as well. We said, okay, well, I'll bring you some back. So we came back and we all stood in the kitchen while we steamed a little bit of them, re-steamed them. She ate crawfish while we talked. The next day, you had an idea of making some vegetable fried rice.
Well, vegetable fried rice is one of those things that I would make once every 2 weeks whenever you were eating grain.
Yeah.
And since you've stopped eating grain, that's put a big brrr on rice dishes in the
right.
house.
Right, yeah. But you make that cauliflower rice.
No, I love cauliflower rice. It's become like a thing in our house. I mean, if Dinner Table Talks had a wish list on Amazon, I guess the number one thing on it would be a food processor. You know what I'm talking about? Those short squat things with the spinning blade.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that on the show before.
Have we? Okay, yeah. Well, I'm saying it bears
the choppy thing?
It bears repeating. I'll tell you why. Because as cauliflower rice emerges uh-huh. in the portfolio of our kitchen.
Uh-huh.
As it gains stock, as its stock rises, cauliflower rice, I'm learning that I need to graduate from the big box grater, which is the way I make cauliflower rice. You take your head of cauliflower, you cut it into manageable sections, you grate it on a box grater at that highest grate hole.
Mm-hmm.
There's the title of the episode, The Highest Grate Hole.
That's the highest grate hole.
It's my favorite one. It's way up there sometimes. And you grate your cauliflower into what it creates.
Hey, it's great.
And I make it with the turmeric, the aforementioned turmeric.
Turmeric.
And that's your rice for the vegetable fried rice.
Yep.
That is your rice.
Yep.
When I make any rice dishes, any Asian dishes that have rice, I make rice in a rice cooker. Rice, double the water, push the button down, done. And then I make a second thing for you, which is the cauliflower rice.
You're a great cook.
So I'm thinking to myself, if I make vegetable fried rice, I'm just making two batches.
Mm-hmm.
And vegetable fried rice is so simple. You take all of the stuff in your produce drawer that makes sense. And at this time of year where we live, I can get broccoli.
Sugar snap peas,
carrots, cauliflower, onion,
eggplant.
I've put that in there before. Pepper.
Yeah. Mushrooms if you wanted them.
Saute that. Throw your rice in there. Soy sauce.
Yeah.
Butter and garlic that you've pre-made. That is a little thing. Uh-huh. I'll post a recipe. But this time, I hand-shelled all of those crawfish, and the waste-to-meat ratio is astounding.
Uh-huh.
That's why you sit there and eat so much. It's not that you're eating that much. It's that you're eating for a long, long time to eat an amount.
Don't encourage people to be lazy about good food.
I sat there and I hand-shucked all those
things. You did.
Alexa, play Vampire Weekend. And then I just sit there and I shuck.
Careful, Alexa's going to go off.
Well, I tried to throw my voice toward you and not her.
Vampire Weekend, but here is other music by Vampire
Weekend. So, but listen, hey, thank you for coming. Alexa, be quiet.
They're listening.
I love her, man. She serves. So, yeah. Hey, you play Vampire Weekend. I'm shucking my crawfish. I throw that in at the last minute. Get them warmed up in that vegetable fried rice. I did a damn good job.
Good job. Mm-hmm. And then I ate it for leftovers at work the next day.
Your leftovers at work the next day, believe me, are a critical part of the pie chart in my mind, which is what is the most effective meal to cook tonight.
You know what? I have a story.
This isn't on script. Go ahead.
It'll be better. Speaking of my lunch, my diet the next day, you know, lunch and our food, and I went to see the endocrinologist finally, and I am doing better. My thyroxine levels are lower, and I am being taken off some of the medicine that I was put on.
Well, I can't tell you how happy I am about your news, because I know, and I've been around to watch, how much this has affected you.
I mean, it really affected my understanding of health and body and food and all of the things that matter to me as far as manifesting wellness and all of that kind of stuff that you...
All of that hard work. It's not even work, because it's just a lifestyle bit you in the butt. Because here you are not well.
I don't even know if it bit me in the butt's right way. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. And what happens with me is that I get discouraged. I mean, everybody gets discouraged, but I'm so adamant about what I believe in that when I get discouraged, it's a bigger fall from the pedestal.
What was discouraging you specifically?
That I could have contributed to and created and or that's just life. A problem that my body maybe never recovers from that could end up in surgery that, I mean...
While you are one of the local mouthpieces of healthy living and healthy eating.
Right.
And you make all the right choices when it comes to those kinds of things.
Well, I try to make choices thoughtfully. I don't know if I make all the right choices, but I make choices thoughtfully. Right. The diet and food are important. And
so here
I know that they affect my health. Well, they do, and they did, and I am seeing improvement, and so the grain-free thing has been a huge contributor. The supplements that I was on with the naturopath, those haven't shown to make a difference at all. I've been off of those long enough for them to not have affected. When I saw the endocrinologist, I told her, I told her everything that had happened. I talked about my health and how
which
I understand it.
Which briefly was that you had a hyperthyroid.
Yes, I had a hyperthyroid, and I told her, I told the doctor, I think I need a higher prescription. It's feeling better when I stay on my medicine. I'm feeling the difference between
you
one time
a little
to the
higher
next.
Dosage.
Yes, I asked for a higher dosage. The doctor was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. My thyroxine levels, my thyroid or whatever, the hormones that are come out of your thyroid were very high. And so they were trying to balance them out. And I was also having tremors and heart arrhythmias. And so they...
Fatigue.
They put me on a beta blocker. And it had me messed up. I love to work outside, you know, all of that. So the long of the short is that I am, after 6 months of following the guidelines of the naturopath to stop eating grain and pay attention to the amount of sugar I eat, which, do I do that? Probably not so much.
No,
but
you don't.
But I definitely do grain-free. And
you're rigid and strict about it in a way that I admire. Like when you decided to go grain-free, you were all in.
Yeah. Then the medicine, now she's taking me off of the beta blockers.
Which makes you feel good.
Of course, anytime. And that was the one that was like, this is the one I want to be on the least. And she was like quick to, and you know, that's the thing with me. There's two things that I love about a doctor. One is when they tell me that my body is capable of healing. And the second is when they tell me that and then also tell me, get off of this medicine.
Rather than let me put you on another medicine.
Oh, God. I'm like, yeah, this is the doctor I want to be with. Yes. She decreased one of my medicines and took me off of another medicine. And then
you'll adjust if required.
And that's exactly what she said. And so what we've learned now is that actually now my thyroxine levels are low, which is why I'm gaining weight as well. I've gained weight along with all this process. You know,
you hear about that, a thyroid issue that causes someone to put on some weight.
Yeah.
You're putting on a little weight.
I've put on a little weight.
I haven't even noticed.
Well, and a lot of people are like, I go, I've gained 20 pounds in the last 6 months, 20 more pounds than I normally have been at it for the last 5 to 10 years of my life. And some people just look at me like, you've gained 20 pounds? Where did it go? Hmm. Like what? But for me, it's huge.
I say all the right places?
I don't mean that in like a stuck up snobby kind of way. I look in the mirror and I look different to me. My face is round and I do have more boobs and more booty. For sure. No doubt. I'm rounder than I used to be.
Hips don't lie.
Oh, that's what I have to say about that. I think that that's really, really good news. And it's exciting to be able to talk about that at the dinner table and know that body healing, trusting my body, diet change, being aware of my diet, being aware of my own body to be able to tell a doctor, I think I need more medicine, because she said that was a big part of it. You needed a high dose of this medicine for a short amount of time.
Then they wean you off.
Now we can back off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's because I knew when I got hit by something, I knew my body changed. I knew when my thyroid swole, not that anybody else wouldn't have known that. And those are some of the things, along with diet, those are some of the things that you have to be aware of to know how to contribute to your own health.
I have an observation and a relationship question.
Okay.
I know how well you are based upon how much time you're spending gardening.
Yes.
When I see that you're not spending time with gardening, what do I do?
Nothing.
If I know that you
let care for me in the state that I'm in and I'll get back to it.
Did I do an okay job?
I guess. That was a long time and I did nothing.
I fed you the way that you needed to be fed.
Yeah, you did.
The grain-free chapter of our life, which was completely unexpected. And while you and I did not anticipate having to completely change the way that we have cooked for as long as we've known one another.
Oh, it broke my heart.
It has become one of the biggest, thickest threads of this show. Because we started this show that we'd been thinking about for a long, long time with this really weird right turn in the way that we cook.
Yeah.
However, when I had a choice between rice and the cauliflower rice, I chose the cauliflower rice. Because why eat that completely like useless grain when you have that choice?
Well, it's not completely useless, but it is definitely more useless in terms of
caloric value.
Yeah. Especially in America where we have plenty of calories.
It has changed the way that we eat for the better.
Yeah. I think it's time to do table topics.
And we got a big one tonight.
I know, right?
We are going to be giving away, and you can win. You listening can win your very own Table Topics to Go travel pack.
What?
I know, right?
We're giving away prizes
and
now?
And we do interesting table topics every week, so surely, you know, you want this thing in your life.
Surely you can participate. Starting today and going through next Monday, you can answer the same table topics question we answered.
Okay, so I think you said that this first go round, we're going to make it super simple.
Yeah, super simple. Just answer the question.
We're about to do our table topics. You'll ask me a question and then I'll ask it back to you. You answer the same question. Now, how do they do? What do they do with that information?
So, there are a few different ways that you can enter on Facebook. You can go to the post right now. You can go to the Instagram. The Instagram.
That the one?
The. You can go there and you can see the post and answer the question. All you have to do is answer the question. And then last but not least, You can do the coolest one.
Uh-oh.
And that is go to dinnertabletalks.com. That's our webpage. And on there, you will see the option to click a button and leave us a voicemail. And when you do that, you just answer the question.
Okay, so they answer the question one of those three ways, and they're going to be entered into a random drawing.
That's correct.
All right, and we'll talk about it in a week or two.
I pulled this out of the What Would You Do Table Topics conversation box.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this. This is our first time to do one of those.
What would you do? Answer this question.
Bring it to me.
If you'd ordered food to go
and
decided you didn't want it, would you still pick it up?
Okay, I'm going to clarify. You and I are texting at the end of the workday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not cooking tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Let's grab some takeout.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, yeah, go get some Huay Thai Chinese food.
Mm-hmm.
And I call in the order.
Mm-hmm.
Then on the way home, I decide that I don't want that anymore. Or we decide, you know what? Screw Huay Thai.
Screw them.
Call BKK and let's get some Thai food.
Yeah.
There is no way we would screw over ever a restaurateur on purpose ever.
I don't think so.
If I have called in an order and they're going to use their goods that they have purchased to make me food and I'm going to stand them up.
Well, you know me well enough.
Never.
Never. You know me well enough to know that I'm going to say, call them back and tell them we don't need it. And then if they say, we've already made it or it's already in process, then I'd be like,
they may tell you that just so that you complete the order. It would be, hey, if I canceled right now, would that be a problem? Please be honest.
Yeah, they I say, need you no to problem, cancel no problem. My order because yeah, we're yeah. not coming to That's, get it.
But yes, I'm going to demonstrate courtesy with someone who is spending money to give me or
what if it was like TGI Fridays or somebody like that?
Okay, when are we getting takeout from TGI Fridays?
Hey, Chewy's.
Okay. So now we're going to place value on mom and pop versus chain.
Yes.
That's fine. I'll do that with you.
Okay.
We call Chewy's.
Uh-huh.
Hey, we want chili rellenos. And Joe wants cheese enchiladas.
We're still calling them back to tell them we want to
And then you say, you know what?
Screw
Chewy's and everything they believe in.
But Chewy's.
Let's just stand them up. Did you give them your phone number? No. Did you give them a credit card? No. Do they have any idea of knowing who you are?
Chewy's
I don't think
is
so.
Going to say, okay, whatever. Unless
well, Chewy's
it's
has
like
the ability to absorb
made.
It. Yeah, Chewy's yeah. has the ability to absorb it.
Unless it's sitting there waiting for you, Chewy's is going to say, okay, whatever.
This isn't even back ethics of like screwing over a restaurant because who the hell is you're a horrible person if you do that. This is like how pre-planned do you think about food to where you put yourself into a position to cancel the food? We would never do that. By the time we get to that point, we've decided. No?
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. But we would call and cancel the food. That's what would happen most of the time. So
I'm friends with too many restaurateurs to not think about them as real people that don't need to be screwed by my whims.
They are real people. I heard someone tell me a story that made me think of a what would you do situation the other day.
I was surprised
that they did what they did, and it was a situation of like somebody giving you too much money kind
of
thing.
I thought to myself,
yeah, I wouldn't have told that story. Because if I did that, I wouldn't want anybody to know I did it.
Well, that's more interesting. Can you tell this, what would you do without giving
no,
it completely
I better
away?
Not. Okay. I better not. Right. Not this time.
Don't you think that service businesses like that have some kind of like, in the inventory world, you call it, spoilage.
Yeah. Over pour or yeah. whatever.
So do you don't you
spillage.
Yeah. Don't you
spillage.
Think that Domino's knows that they're gonna get stiffed
yeah.
on X percent of
yeah.
any night's pizzas?
Yeah, yeah. I think it kinda depends on what it is.
I give Domino's more respect than that.
But we're always gonna call to cancel the order. I'm gonna call and tell you I'm canceling my order. Now, most likely, unless you're like, oh, it's literally sitting here. And it depends. And then even at that point, it kind of depends on who it is. Because if it's like mom and pop, it's literally sitting here. Well, I'm going to go get it. If it's some big chain restaurant or some big chain pizza place and they're like, it's literally sitting here. I'd be like, you feed it to the employees, you know, like. Somebody will eat it.
I would think that in the digital age that we live in.
And they charge half the time now online, especially the big places.
Well,
so you already paid for it.
That's where I was going.
That's why they do it that way.
Restauranting is one of the last social contracts where you don't have to prepay for the
goods.
You
know what? I thought about that the other day.
And so I'm sure that the restaurants love things like Bite Squad and Favor and Uber Eats, where the cash is in hand before they cook anything.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was out at a nice restaurant. I don't remember where or what, but it was a nice restaurant and it was going to be an expensive meal.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, how do they know I'm going to pay for it when we get done?
Right.
How do they know? Like, what if my card doesn't work? What if it's one of those weirdo times?
What if you walk the bill if you're there, literally there by yourself?
That is interesting.
It is one of the last social engagements where money is changes hands that you don't prepay for goods.
Well, here's the deal. I want you to pay for things, but not table topics. I want you to win table topics.
That's right. So you tell us your answer to the question. Read it loud and clear.
If you'd ordered food to go and decided you didn't want it, would you still pick it up?
What is our criteria? Most creative? Makes us laugh? What are we looking for?
Just answer.
Have a pulse.
Yes, no. Okay. We're going to draw randomly.
No points for creativity?
No points for creativity.
I'd like to add points for creativity.
No points. Not this time. Just do it. Just do it. I'm serious.
I am sick and tired of you being in control of this relationship.
No, you're not.
Hey, thanks so much for pulling up a chair and joining us for Dinner Table Talks. You can always learn more and help us spread the word all across social media. Check out at Our Dinner Table Talks on Facebook and Instagram. And for you Twitter users, at @dinner_talks. Visit our website at dinnertabletalks.com. Or shoot us an email at talk@dinnertabletalks.com. We look forward to hearing from you.